Hello, today is Tuesday, August the 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, President Trump condemns racism after the weekend's horrific mass shootings.
In one voice, our nation must condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy.
North Korea launches yet another missile. Also ahead, U.S. and Chinese stocks plummet after the U.S. declares China a currency manipulator. It's all on today's International Edition. Anguished families planned funerals in two U.S. communities as they built makeshift memorials to 31 victims as politicians pointed fingers and a nation numbed by gun violence wondered what might come next.
The shooter in El Paso posted a manifesto online consumed by racist hate. In one voice, our nation must condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy.
Speaking out against the shootings, Trump called for bipartisan solutions to the bloodshed, but offered few details. Joining us now to talk more about it is Professor Brian Levin, director of the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at California State University in San Bernardino. Thank you for being with us, Professor. President Trump spoke to the nation Monday, but there are people questioning whether he has the moral authority to rally a nation against the epidemic of racism, given some of his rhetoric as of late. What do you say?
He's the only person who can deliver this message with regard to domestic terrorism and white supremacy because he's the president of the United States. So I think he hit a single. He mentioned white supremacy and domestic terrorism in the same breath. However, it should have been up front and there should have been more concrete proposals specifically relating to the ascendant domestic terror threat in the same way that he had urged other people, like President Obama, to do so with respect to Daesh or ISIS.
Is white supremacy in the United States growing, or is it just becoming more emboldened?
Let's look at the data and see what we know about white supremacy. Reuters Ipsos 2017, 39% of Americans say whites are under attack. 2018, 44% said that. Let's look at hate crime. Hate crime in 30 of America's largest cities, according to our Cal State Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism study, 30 of America's largest cities hit a 9% rise, which is a high for the decade and the steepest increase since 2015. Let's look at social media. Similar results. Bottom line is, if you look at our report, which you can find on Prof. Levin, one of the things that we've seen is an overall increase related to social science data, crime data, as well as digital data, all of which points, unfortunately, in that same direction. Now, not every place went up, but even among those places that went down, it was oftentimes off of highs. One other quick thing that I think is interesting, anti-Muslim hate crimes dropped precipitously, as did homicides by violent Salafist jihadist terrorists. Let's look back at 2015 and 16 when anti-Muslim hate crimes were rising. We had terror events and we had a lot of political rhetoric around it. Indeed, December 2015 around the San Bernardino terrorist attacks and the president Muslim ban proposal, at that time, hate crimes against Muslims rose precipitously and it was the worst month for anti-Muslim hate crime going all the way back to the 9/11 period. So what I think we're seeing now is a little bit of a swap out. And what I mean is back in 2015, the top issue for the electorate was terrorism, and now it's immigration.
Are you saying that the president's rhetoric inspires people to act upon their views about white supremacy?
Well, it may, but I think the best thing to do is look at some of this data. November 2016 was the worst month for hate crime going back 14 years to the first anniversary of 9/11. The day after the election was the worst day for hate crime going back to June 2003. What's the second worst month for hate crime in the United States? Over this decade, Charlottesville, August 2017, and we saw spikes after his statement about good people on both sides. So we saw spikes following his Muslim ban proposal announcement, which he did on national television. We saw again a spike when his comments were attached to another emotionally charged issue. One other quick point. President Bush, 6 days after 9/11, speaks in the Islamic Center of D.C. about tolerance towards Muslims. Hate crimes against them dropped by two-thirds the next day, two-thirds the next year. Also, we've seen a shift with regard to what extremists are committing acts of terror. A few years ago, violent Salafist jihadists had the overwhelming majority of homicides in extremist attacks. There were only three white supremacist ones in 2016. The next year, 2017, it rose again to 13. 2018 rose to 17. And here's what's most disturbing. Just through August, we now have more white supremacist extremist murders in 2019 than we had extremist murders of all stripes for all of last year.
Where do we go from here as a nation? What do you think needs to happen now?
The president has to assume the bully pulpit and sustain and amplify the statements he made today. And he has to make them in a manner that's not diluted with nine other points. He has to say white supremacy is the most prominent domestic terrorism problem, and it is against the values of the United States, and anyone who follows this is not a supporter of mine. We have yet to hear that.
All right, that is Professor Brian Levin, Director of the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at California State University, San Bernardino. Meanwhile, former President Barack Obama has made his first public statement since the deadly mass shootings in Texas and Ohio. The AP's Ed Donahue reports.
The 44th president said Americans must soundly reject language from any leader who feeds a climate of fear and hatred or normalizes racist sentiments. President Trump's name was not mentioned in the statement. Barack Obama has been cautious, like many other former presidents, to avoid criticizing his successor. In his statement, he said, people need to denounce the language of leaders who demonize those who don't look like us or suggest that other people, including immigrants, threaten our way of life or refer to others as subhuman. Ed Donahue, Washington.
Well, the FBI has declared the mass shooting in El Paso, Texas, as an act of domestic terrorism. The mayor of El Paso, DeMargo, praised his citizens and said he will not call the killer by name.
This was an act of domestic terrorism fueled by hate, an evil individual. I will not assist in promoting or emboldening his agenda, nor any movement that he would be associated with.
Well, joining us to talk more about the role of domestic terrorism and similarities to other extremist forms of terrorism is VOA national correspondent Jeff Selden. Tell us about it, Jeff.
Well, researchers who have looked into terrorism, both Islamic terrorism, jihadists, foreign fighters, as well as white supremacy, what they would tell you is it's not that it's a bigger problem now, it's just that the country as a whole is starting to pay more attention to it. With the fall of the Islamic State Caliphate and the end of the so-called foreign fighter phenomenon, which saw almost 50,000 foreign fighters from around the world flock to Iraq and Syria, including those from North America, some a handful from the United States, the focus is returning more domestically. And people are paying more attention to these trends that have existed for a while. And in some ways, they're very similar to the same types of factors that led to the radicalization of would-be Islamic State foreign fighters, Islamic terrorists in this country. In other ways, they're different. And some of the challenges, therefore, are the same. It's hard to come up with a mass solution to this because the individual motivating factors with each person who decides to become a terrorist, whether they decided they wanted to go overseas and fight for ISIS or whether they wanted to stay in the U.S. and commit a crime here in the name of a white supremacist group, those factors are unique. It's hard to say how do you stop somebody from doing it because they're being drawn in to this environment, which is preying on their insecurities, which is preying on their frailties, and which is making them feel empowered by giving them this key to open a door to lots of hate.
But FBI Director Christopher Wray did say that there has been a rise in domestic terrorism attacks by white nationalists in particular. This seems, you know, to be front and center now for the FBI. What similarities are they saying they're seeing between this type of extremist and an Islamic extremist, a white nationalist versus an Islamic extremist? They're all extremists, correct?
Well, they're all people who started off and they were recruited by somebody.
Radicalized?
They were radicalized. They were recruited somehow. Sometimes it's in person. Sometimes it's in an online environment. But you have somebody who felt powerless and then they fall in with a group, whether it's the Islamic terrorists, the jihadists, or the white supremacists. And by being a part of that group, they begin to feel powerful. Years ago, I spoke to a former jihadist recruiter, somebody who was drawn in initially into radical Islam. And what he said about the way he and others have been recruited is that these guys, whether it's for Al-Qaeda or Islamic State, are really some of the world's best therapists, best psychologists, because they know how to key in, they know how to profile, and they know how to groom somebody to make them more open to pursuing the hate, pursuing the violence, and seeing it as justified. They really know how to identify the individual problems to make them want to be part of this bigger group and indulge in terrorism.
You know, if somebody is intent on doing something like this, committing violence, they could do it with anything. They could do it with a hammer. They could do it with a knife. They could do it with a car. But what was so striking over the weekend in this first mass shooting was how quickly, I think it was like 13 minutes or something, that the police got there. And yet, because of the fact that people are able to get their hands on these military-style weapons and then alter them to where they can kill massive amounts of people, it would seem like that would be also part of the problem they'd need to address as to how to avoid, whether it's people that are mentally ill or, you know, this type of weapon, have that so much easy access to it.
One of the things that's shown up time and again in this debate about what experts have called countering violent extremism, or CVE, whether you're talking about foreign terrorism or domestic terrorism, is in the United States, there's been a huge political debate over several components of how you do that. Do you address the gun violence? What does that mean in terms of gun rights? What types of measures do you put in place? There's a very strong lobby in favor of gun rights and the Second Amendment. How do you balance that against protecting civilians from gun violence? With the mental health component, how do you get the state involved in mandating mental health help for somebody who may not want it or may not be receptive to it? And so part of this comes down to the political will and the political decisions countries like the United States and others that have had to deal with this in other ways are willing or capable of making. And in a polarized political environment like we have in the U.S. right now, that becomes all the more difficult.
All right. Well, that is VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Seldon. President Trump is planning to pay a visit to El Paso on Wednesday, and he will also go to Dayton, Ohio, the site of the other mass shooting, but a date is not yet known. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. The U.S. joins the U.S. or the U.K. joins the U.S. in the Strait of Hormuz mission as Iran slams new sanctions. Colombia gives citizenship to children of Venezuelan parents. President Vladimir Putin tells Trump, "We'll develop new nuclear missiles if you do." And hopes fade as South Africa's unemployment hits a record high. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. The United States takes action again after China devalues its currency, AP correspondent Mike Gracia reports.
The United States has responded to China's devaluation of its yuan by labeling China a currency manipulator. The designation by the U.S. Treasury Department came hours after President Donald Trump accused China of unfairly devaluing its currency. The U.S. has not had China on the currency blacklist since 1994. China allowed its currency to weaken to an 11-year low on Monday, a move that rattled financial markets. U.S. stocks plummeted to their worst loss of the year, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average plunging 767 points, the S&P 500 falling some 87 points, and the NASDAQ Composite Index taking a 278-point tumble. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Well, news of the U.S. labeling China a currency manipulator sent U.S. and China's stocks plummeting. The Dow plunged 760 points in the worst day of 2019, while China's Nikkei dropped 393 points as Trump's trade war intensifies. North Korea fired missiles into the sea off its east coast for the fourth time in less than 2 weeks as Pyongyang protested joint U.S.-South Korea military drills and said it violated diplomatic agreements. U.S. and South Korean troops have begun a military exercise in South Korea. In the weeks ahead of the exercise, North Korea fired several missiles and warned Seoul and Washington not to hold the exercises. Also this week, U.S. Secretary of Defense Mark Esper visits Seoul and Tokyo. VOA Seoul correspondent Bill Gallo spoke with Kate Pound Dawson about the exercises and the stalled effort to end North Korea's nuclear programs.
Well, these are about as quiet of joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises as you could ever expect. There was no formal announcement today on the U.S. side. South Korea's defense minister told Parliament, in fact, that these military exercises began today. But other than that, you would hardly know that they happened. These are lasting for around half a month, and they will at least start with computer-simulated exercise. So not really some of the big flashes and bangs and bombs being dropped and things like that. This is very low-key, scaled-back exercises, but it's meant to sort of simulate the retaking of wartime operational control of South Korea from the United States.
All right. Now, how has North Korea been talking about these exercises? What have they been doing? How are they reacting?
Well, for several weeks now, they've been complaining about these upcoming exercises, saying that if they go ahead, if the U.S. and South Korea go ahead with these exercises, they not only will continue to test short-range missiles, but they hinted that possibly they could resume nuclear and ICBM tests. Now, it's not clear we're anywhere near that point right now. North Korea has tested several short-range ballistic missiles. These go from anywhere from about 150 kilometers to 600 kilometers, so definitely on the short-range side of things. But they are ballistic missiles, and they're getting a bit more complicated. And you know, there's this sense that North Korea is sort of inching its way, slowly ramping up the provocations as it sees the U.S. and South Korea undertake these military exercises.
The new U.S. Secretary of Defense, Mr. Esper, is in the region and will be visiting Seoul in the coming days. Is there any indication he's working or will be working with the South Korean government on moving forward talks with North Korea on denuclearization?
He'll come here and presumably try to get things started. It's not really clear that the North Korean talks can be moved forward without the participation of North Korea, to be honest. North Korea has not given any sign that it wants to engage in working-level talks, and presumably it would not do so during the present U.S.-South Korea military drill.
All right. VOA Seoul correspondent Bill Gallo speaking with my colleague Kate Pound Dawson. Nigerian technologist Shinowe Uday wants to ensure schoolgirls learn information and communications technology for summer. Uday says she's trying to boost gender parity in technology in Africa's most populous nation, where less than 20% of women are involved in the industry. Timothy Obizu reports for VOA from Abuja.
At this tech-based facility in the city center, girls between the ages of 5 and 17 are spending their summer learning skills that include coding, animation, and robotics. The summer program known as the Smart Girls Tech Camp is the brainchild of Nigerian technologist Chinenye Ude. She says she's tackling gender inequality in Nigeria's tech sector with this project.
So what we are trying to do is that how can we girls get these girls abreast? How can we let them know that it's important that technology, they get involved in technology no matter how little? The knowledge is very important both in their daily lives, in their business, and in their careers moving forward.
Women occupy less than a fifth of Nigeria's technology sector, according to the country's Statistics Bureau. The Smart Girls Tech program targets 1,000 young girls every year and prepares them for a future in technology. Tech expert and instructor Onyedima Onyekachi says progress is being made.
From where we met them and where they are now is not the same. And we discovered that is as a result of psych. There was a notion that girls don't like tech. But we discovered that girls actually are enthusiastic about tech. It's just the approach, just the way technology is being introduced to them.
For young girls like aspiring animator Damila Laujo, technology could be their access to a booming market dominated by men.
When I was younger, I was very interested in cartoons and the way they were made. So when I searched up, usually on YouTube, I looked at that it involved ICT, and so I became more and more interested.
10-year-old Ruby Dike, who is more interested in robotics, says it could have several applications.
Let's say I'm able to program a robot that can help in the house. I'm able to program a robot that can control global warming.
Nigeria's ICT industry is among the biggest in Africa and keeps growing rapidly. It has evolved into a multi-billion dollar industry within the last decade. Like many other sectors, however, it is characterized by low female representation. People like Ude are breaking boundaries with tech program for young girls. Although it could take a while before this translates into substantial female representation in the industry, it is making an impact on the girls. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, scientists say evidence is mounting that trees can have a far-reaching effect in stemming global warming by removing large amounts of carbon from the atmosphere. Tree planting advocates say it's something they've known for decades, and the world is finally getting the message. VOA's Mike O'Sullivan has more.
Volunteers with the group Tree People are planting trees and other plants at this national forest near Los Angeles. These native species have been crowded out by invasive mustard and thistles.
So we've been planting about 40 different species. Some of them are grasses, some of them are what you would call shrubs, some of them are trees, oaks, elderberries.
All native to this ecosystem. Trees are a crucial component.
Because we know trees have multiple benefits. Trees will shade humans, the environment, as we see increases and dramatic increases in extreme heat. Trees help retain water in situations where there's flooding or we're trying to prevent water runoff.
And trees can capture huge amounts of carbon, reducing global warming. It has been confirmed in study after study, including one by European researchers recently published in the journal Science. Planting trees also counteracts deforestation. Forest restoration projects are underway in countries such as Indonesia, says a San Francisco-based researcher with the World Wildlife Fund.
In a project called 30 Hills, where they're taking a comprehensive approach, not just to carbon benefits, but all the co-benefits that come from forests and from restoration, including poverty alleviation.
In one case, creating a habitat for bees and a honey-making business for local villagers. The recent study says new forests could capture 2/3 of the extra carbon that has entered the atmosphere from human activity. But it's not the only answer.
It's one of the pieces, and another huge piece of it is reducing our energy and industry emissions. We really need both things.
As the climate warms, healthy forests are more resistant to fire and provide shelter from the sun for animals and humans. While governments can help, here in California, individuals and local communities are also doing their part.
Take personal responsibility. Help plant trees. It's fun. It makes our communities greener, more climate resilient, more sustainable.
Won't make a hole in the ground.
Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Oh, she's sweet but a psycho, a little bit psycho. A new young American singer is making waves as someone to watch. Her 2018 song, Sweet But Psycho, released in August of 2018, became Ava Max's breakthrough hit, reaching number one in more than 26 countries, including Germany and the United Kingdom, where it stayed at number one for four consecutive weeks. Max released another hit single in March, So Am I, the song about being okay even if you're a so-called misfit, broke the top 10 in several European countries. She's now working on a debut album, which has not yet been released. One fun fact about Ava Max, she says she cuts her own hair. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day. When she's me, you know you love it. She tastes as me. Don't sugarcoat it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Religious freedom has come under increasing attack in China. U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom Commissioner Gary Bauer said China has declared war on all religious faiths.
Christians, house churches, or underground churches have come under tremendous assault. Last year or so, there have been churches that have been shuttered, others that have been literally demolished. And then recently they started moving against the churches that did register and did follow the government's guidelines. But it's not just the Christians. There's been a lot of news about what's happening to Chinese Muslims, the Uyghurs, where internment camps have been set up. The estimates are between 1 and 3 million Chinese Muslims are in these camps.
Commissioner Bauer said the bottom line is that China is sending a message to its people that they will not tolerate Chinese citizens having loyalty to anything above the Chinese Communist Party. Speaking at the recently concluded Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said, China is home to one of the worst human rights crises of our time.
In September of last year, Chun Weixia, a member of the Falun Gong, was sentenced to 3.5 years of prison simply for practicing his faith. In May of 2018, authorities arrested Wang Yi, the pastor of Early Rain Covenant Church, a large unregistered church in Chengdu, for openly criticizing the government's controls on religious freedom. He's still in jail today.
The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom has also called for the release of numerous prisoners of conscience from around the world. One of those is imprisoned Chinese Christian church leader Wu Shijian. Wu is a religious freedom advocate who suffered torture during a previous 16-year prison sentence, was detained again in 2015, and sentenced in 2016 to a 7.5-year sentence for so-called subversion of government power. The United States is vigorously promoting religious freedom as part of its foreign policy. As Secretary Pompeo has said, religious freedom is embedded deeply in the American character. But it isn't exclusively an American idea. Indeed, just the opposite. The UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights affirms religious freedom or belief as a universal right.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm